Thank you all, ladies and gentlemen. In order to introduce the evening's first speaker, I'd like to give the floor to one of the country's finest appellate lawyers who's time and again zealously and effectively advocated on behalf of the people of the state of Florida. We're all very fortunate to have him in Tallahassee, the Solicitor General of the state of Florida, Amit Agarwal. Mr. Agarwal.
Oh, those are some bright lights. Thank you very much for that gracious introduction when he said that one of the most distinguished appellate lawyers was here. I was looking around for who that was. But it's wonderful to be here this evening and to be a part of this magnificent event, and especially to have the opportunity to introduce our new Attorney General, Ashley Moody. You know, shortly after I started this job, I was at home one day, and I walked into my study, and I found my six-year-old kid sitting at my desk and scribbling furiously, and he was really kind of just totally concentrated on what he was doing. And I asked him, I said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "I'm writing a letter to Santa." I said, "Okay." So I looked over his shoulder, and it was a list, of course, of things that he wanted, and it was a pretty long list. The first item was something that I had never heard of. It was some kind of obscure, newfangled toy. And the second thing on his list was Solicitor General. And for, you know, I asked him, I said, "Well, what do you mean Solicitor General? Why did you have that on your list?" And he said, "Well, when I grow up, I want to be Solicitor General." It was a very kind of, it was a very sweet moment. And I thought to myself, wow, you know, my son actually kind of respects what I do and he wants to be like me, and it was a pretty good couple of seconds. And then I asked him, I made the mistake of asking him, "Why do you want to be Solicitor General?" And he said, "Because you're the boss, and I want to be the boss when I grow up." And so I told him, I said, "You know, I don't want to burst your bubble or anything, but I'm actually not the boss. You know, the boss in our office is the Attorney General, and I'm very privileged to work for her." And he didn't say anything. He was just kind of silent, and he looked down, was quiet. And I thought, okay, we'll just leave it at that. So I left the room. I came back. He wasn't there. I looked down at the sheet of paper, and it's still sitting there on my desk. And the first item is the same. For the second item, he crossed out Solicitor General and wrote Attorney General in its place. So General Moody, watch out, you've got some competition. But I am here this evening to give an introduction to someone who I am incredibly fortunate and privileged to serve under, and that is our new Attorney General, Ashley Moody. You know, I know that all of you are really eager, as am I, to hear from our distinguished speakers this evening, and so I'll try to keep this introduction brief and to focus on just a few of the many, many reasons why I think we are, all of us, so incredibly fortunate to have General Moody serving at the helm of the AG's office. First, and just to state the obvious, it's really nice and altogether fitting and proper in a Florida Attorney General to have someone who is a Floridian through and through. General Moody, as you may know, was born and brought up in Florida. She's from Plant City. She is a fifth generation Floridian and is a self-described triple gator. Having earned her undergraduate degree, a master's degree, and her law degree, all from the University of Florida. And General, my understanding is that folks in your family have also pretty much all graduated from the University of Florida. So she comes from a Gator family and nevertheless has been bold enough to take up residence in our state's capital in Tallahassee, which is a very friendly town in my experience, but is not always hospitable to Gators. And on top of her deep roots in the state of Florida, General Moody has served as a judge for 10 years. She really brings an extraordinary depth and breadth of experience to the task of being Attorney General. The Attorney General, of course, is sometimes referred to as our top cop, as our chief law enforcement officer, and General Moody knows all about law enforcement. She is a former federal prosecutor. You know, I think the time that we really got to know each other was shortly after the election when we had our first meeting, and we kind of bonded, swapping stories over being junior AUSAs serving in Mag Court. I don't know how many of you have had the experience of serving in Mag Court, but it is an experience that is not for the timid. And I have to say, she beat me out because she told me that she did two different stints in two different Mag Courts, which was more than I could say. But I came away from that conversation feeling such great pride that our Attorney General is not only committed to law enforcement, but has really served in the trenches, and she gets it. And I know that she is going to be a phenomenal advocate for our law enforcement community. On top of that, of course, the Attorney General serves as our chief legal officer for the state. And who better to discharge that solemn responsibility than someone who has served as a circuit court judge for 10 years, adjudicating all the most important issues, state and federal, civil and criminal, that come before our courts, and that of course serve as the bread and butter of the work of the Attorney General's office on a day-to-day basis. Now, I knew about General Moody's impeccable credentials and her distinguished resume. I'd followed the campaign. But I guess what's been most gratifying to me and to all of us at OAG over the course of the last few weeks and months has been getting to know her as a person and to see her in action as a leader. And that has really been a sight to see, and I feel like I've learned a lot from her just over the course of the last few weeks and months. And there are a couple of things in particular that I just wanted to share with you all tonight that have really resonated with me. The first is that General Moody really brings to the table all the very best qualities of a trial court judge. And I mean a sort of scholarly and intellectual engagement with the law, a careful, deliberative process, but also a trial judge's practical orientation. The practical orientation of someone who has a substantial docket and has to move a large number of cases every day. And that has, I have to tell you, to see that combination of characteristics has been a sight to see. And the second is, the thing that's really impressed me has been to see how much she cares about real people and how the law and the work of the Attorney General's office affects real people. You know, we often talk about legal issues, and General Moody doesn't just ask us about abstract legal principles, although she does ask a lot of questions about that. She asks about how the statute that's at issue is actually applied in practice and how it's going to affect the lives of real people and not just people in the state of Florida. And similarly, you know, the Attorney General, we sometimes think of the Attorney General as someone who's wrestling with larger than life legal issues. But on top of that, General Moody, of course, presides over an office with more than 1,000 employees. And one thing that's really impressed me tremendously has been that she somehow takes the time out of her schedule away from her pressing public responsibilities to pick up the phone and to call a new employee and to say, hey, I just wanted to introduce myself and to welcome you to the office. Or to call a junior attorney and say, congratulations on a job well done. And you can imagine how much of a difference that makes to the attorneys who serve in the office of the Attorney General. And that's been really gratifying to see. So to sum up, fervent commitment to the rule of law. To paraphrase something General Moody said the other day, a kind of awe and reverence for our system of justice, which is, of course, one of the glories of American democracy. And a genuine, heartfelt concern for real people, both within and outside of the office of the Attorney General. It occurs to me that there is a word in the English lexicon to describe someone who exhibits that fairly remarkable constellation of characteristics, and that word is honorable. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in extending a very warm welcome to our new Attorney General, the Honorable Ashley Moody.
Thank you so much. You know, I might offer a tip to those that organize tonight's event. You asked the man who works for me to give my introduction. So now you all will get out of here 30 minutes later. You should have asked my little brother here, who's at the head table, Jamie Moody. He would have come up here and said, "Hey, good to be here. My sister's here. She wants to say a few things. She's all right. Come on up." It is really great to be back with the Federalist Society Florida Conference. I remember last year when I was here, this was a much crowded stage. And those of you that were intimately involved with the debate of the Attorney General's, or the panel of the Attorney General's candidates last year, know this, but I'm going to let you all in on a little secret. I had the flu during that panel. And I'm not just talking about the little flu, the full-on contagious, the doctor made me wear a mask when I was walking out of the doctor's office, flu. But I was not going to miss this panel. And so this is how you'll note what the organizers did. I let them in the night before. I said, "I'm going to come anyway, but I'm highly contagious, so I'm going to wait until the last minute and come in so I don't have to shake as many people's hands. I didn't want to get people get sick." So your brilliant Joe Jaco, who is moderating the event, I come on the stage, and he's got himself far to the right, and then all three Republicans, the Democrat, then me, with a box of tissues on the end. He's a smart guy. That's why he's the new general counsel for Governor DeSantis. Good job, Governor DeSantis. I am honored to have taken office as the 38th Attorney General of the state of Florida and to follow in the footsteps of my friend, Pam Bondi, who encouraged me to pursue this job and laid a foundation for success for our department. I want to congratulate the Federalist Society Florida chapters for once again gathering a great list of panels and speakers to present and debate the legal issues facing Florida. And I can tell you firsthand from my experiences last year, when we base our arguments on the rule of law and the Constitution, we always win the debate. On the campaign trail, we took this position to the people of the state of Florida that the guiding principle for Florida's Attorney General should be the rule of law and defending the Constitution, and they responded overwhelmingly. About 4.2 million Floridians agreed on November the 6th that they want an Attorney General that will do that faithfully, and I am glad to be here and carry on that mission. But stressing the importance of the rule of law and the separation of powers is the duty of every American lawyer. And that's why the Federalist Society is so important. Through scholarly discussion and debate, we're reminded how our government was designed to function and assess whether we are meeting that challenge without shouting over each other. In Tampa, we were very fortunate to have a strong Federalist Society. Thanks to many people like my good friend Ed Page, Judge Tom Barber, Morgan Streetman. Morgan Streetman has served as president of the Tampa Bay chapter for over 8 years, and I'm sure it's for all that extra pay, right? All that extra pay. Well, thank you for your service, Morgan. You are truly an example of living out one's principles through service. And I hired another Federalist member recently as my general counsel to the Office of the Attorney General. Richard Martin, are you here? I know you're here. There you are. Richard is a smart, hardworking lawyer who shares the commitment to the principles of this organization. He was actually the vice president of the Tampa chapter before I convinced him to take a huge pay cut, leave his cushy digs at a private law firm, and come take a job where he could have an enormous hand in watching those principles play out. Winston Churchill said, "A man must choose either a life of words or a life of action." Richard saw the role of general counsel as an opportunity to do both. So Richard, you're welcome for that pay cut. It was such a pleasure to be here tonight also with our newest justices of the Florida Supreme Court, all of with whom I have a connection. Justice Lagoa, we both went to state schools, were state judges, federal prosecutors, worked for statewide law firms. Justice Luck, we taught at Florida Judicial College, advanced judicial studies. If those unruly judges had known that one of us would be an attorney general and the other a Florida Supreme Court justice, they might have listened to us. And Justice Muniz, who was Chief of Staff and Deputy Attorney General for the Florida Attorney General's Office under General Bondi. I was so honored to have been with the governor when he appointed these justices. Thank you, Governor, for remaining true to what you told the people of Florida on the campaign trail and appointing conservative justices to the Florida Supreme Court. They will serve a vital role in maintaining the balance of power in our republic by exercising, as Hamilton said, neither force nor will, but merely judgment. As a former judge, I remain in awe of those who take on this tremendous responsibility. I know the difficult decisions you will be asked to make, being blind to both criticism and praise. We thank you for your service, and even if my office ends up on the losing side of one of the arguments you will hear, please know how much we value your commitment and respect your judgment. Many of you close to me know that I loved being a judge. By applying the law, you could take chaos and reduce it to order, create peace and stability from conflict. But judges may only decide the cases that come before them. And recognizing the important and necessary limits of a judicial role, I resigned to seek the office of Attorney General so I could be more proactive in this state and tackle the most difficult issues we face, like the opioid epidemic, human trafficking, elder abuse, mental health, and how it intersects with our court system. As I take the helm as Florida's Attorney General, I am proud to report we are at a 47-year low crime rate across our state. That didn't happen by accident. It is due to the hard work of our law enforcement, men and women, and prosecutors. As the top cop, I will continue to support them in their mission to keep our community safe with all the tools of my agent at my agency's disposal. But I will also guide them to remember that government should only act within those powers given by the people through our Constitution and laws, that they are limited powers set forth by founders leery of government overreach. I will lead our state as the top lawyer with an unwavering and deep-seated belief when any branch of government oversteps its power, judicial, legislative, or executive, it weakens our nation and our state. I am ever mindful that I have been entrusted to do my part to ensure that foundation, a government with a foundation of a brilliant balance of power, that foundation endures. And when the federal government overreaches, issuing illegal mandates to our state or our citizens, I will fight all the way to the United States Supreme Court to protect Florida, its citizens, and the powers rightfully reserved to our state. President Ronald Reagan once said, "America is too great for small dreams," and that is also true for the great state of Florida. We are a diverse state of over 20 million people. Over 100 million people visit Florida every year. We have shown that conservative principles can lead to prosperity. We have shown that respecting the Constitution and the rule of law can unleash ingenuity, giving a free society the room to innovate and create jobs. We have shown that we are capable of bold action to address our greatest problems. For those lawyers here tonight that want a career of both words and actions, I ask you to consider working and joining our team. I am putting together a great team across the state to help accomplish our mission. Where's Jesse Panuccio? If we can only keep the GOJ from stealing our lawyers. In my first 3 weeks with a government shutdown, you've already stolen one of my lawyers. And I've asked Richard Martin, my general counsel, to have you sign a non-solicitation agreement before you leave. If you want to come work in our office, you will find the work exciting and challenging. We try cases. We deliver justice for victims of crime and fraud. We protect and defend the Constitution and the ideals most important to the Federalist Society. We pursue the most important legal issues facing our nation before the highest courts in the land. We do it every day, and we're hiring. We want the best. Now, I can't promise you I'll pay you what you might make in the private sector. Just ask Richard. But if you're interested in doing that kind of exciting work, the kind that you can be proud of, the kind that shows action and words, I hope you'll come and join Florida's law firm. We're hiring. Thanks for having me. Thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Thank you, General Moody. I think I speak for everyone in saying that we're very glad to have you as our state's chief law enforcement officer and wish you very well in the years ahead. How about another round of applause for Attorney General Moody? Now, I think we're going to right into the next speaker. All right, we're going to give it another 15 minutes. Please enjoy your desserts, and we'll be right back. Thank you.
All right, I have three kids that are all in junior high, so I'm really good at telling everybody to sit down. All right. Hey, before I get started here, I just want to give two quick shout-outs. There's been so many people over the years who have been a part of the process and bringing three new Supreme Court justices to the court, but I just want to thank Jason Unger and the Supreme Court J&C. And I'd also like to thank Ben Gibson and all the work he did during the transition process. Okay, I figured I'd start this introduction with a question. So if you are someone who didn't know there was a governor's race this past year that had maybe a couple $100 million spent in it, and you know nothing about Ron DeSantis, raise your hand. Okay, no takers. So I'm going to skip the bio sketch, and I'm going to go straight to one story. I just wanted to mention, when I first met Ron DeSantis was prior to him running for Congress. I went over to Jacksonville to speak at a function about this size. It was the federal bar meeting, the annual meeting there. And we had just introduced our Obamacare litigation. And I go into this crowd, and as you can imagine, I get hammered with questions. People challenging Florida's standing, people saying that we have no Commerce Clause argument, people saying the whole lawsuit is political. And after that, there were two people who had vocalized to me that we had a real case here, and a case that should go all the way. And as you can imagine, one of those people was Ron DeSantis. So. And to me, that's just evidence of the kind of clear principles he has, the kind of strong character he has, and the person that you know you can rely on as governor of this state. Let's bring up Ron DeSantis.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. It's great to be here. Really an honor. Thank you. Thank you. Please be seated. Thank you, Joe. It's we're trying to do as much as we can, and Joe's in the office late every night. But you know, my sense is we have a good opportunity. Want to make the most of it. I think back to a story about Winston Churchill when he was up in years. He's about 78. I think this was probably the early 50s, and he got invited to speak at the Women's Temperance Union, and. The head of the organization went up to him and said, "You know, Sir Winston, we very much admire your statesmanship, but we are not at all in favor of your habits of the drink." And she said, "If you look," and it's probably a ballroom like this, "if you took all the brandy and wine and whiskey that you've drank throughout your life and you filled it in this ballroom, it would go all the way up to your chin." In which Churchill then looked at the ceiling, made note of his advanced age, and he said, "Well, I don't dispute your calculations. The only thought I have is this: how much left to do and how little time to do it. So that's kind of what we're trying to do, is really make the most of the opportunity to do as much as we can on behalf of the people of Florida. Of course, probably nothing we will do will end up having a longer impact than the what we've already done in the first month, which is to put three people on the Supreme Court. And, you know, nobody who was running for governor this cycle on either side of the aisle talked about the court, really, except for me. I was the only one that really would always bring it up, because I understood the significance to do three on a seven-member court, and not just putting three justices on any seven-member court. You're putting three justices on a court that, in my judgment, over the last generation had really gone astray. And so this was a chance to transform our court from kind of a super legislature aligned with the Democratic Party into a legal institution, which it was meant to be. So I thought the stakes were high. And so, you know, we have people in this room who've worked hard at cultivating, good people. And the way it works in Florida, you guys all know, you know, there's a nominating commission. You don't get involved with the Senate confirmation like they do federally. So I was given a list of 11 people, and I can tell you that I like my three, but I think if I would have thrown a dart, anyone I would have hit on that list would have been would have done a good job. I mean, there was no doubt about that. And I think that's a testament to a lot of the work that people in this room have done over the years to make sure that we have folks who are ethical, talented, but who really understand what it means to be a judge in our constitutional system. So we got the list. I had all these guys, you know, helping me out, vetting everything, there was different interviews that happened, and then eventually I just interviewed all 11 one-on-one. And so this was before Christmas. And I didn't want to name anyone prior to taking office, because it's kind of like a reverse lame duck appointment. And so I don't really have the authority to do it yet if I do this. So I was like, you know what, I'm not going to do anything until I get into office. But I also didn't want it to leak. I didn't want to tell anybody. So I didn't tell anybody who I was going to pick. And so I told my staff, I said, we will do the day after the inauguration, we will do a Supreme Court nomination in the morning, and then I will go to the panhandle for the hurricane recovery in the afternoon. And so that was on the schedule. They didn't know who was going to be. They didn't necessarily know where it was going to be. And so I go on inauguration day, you know, take the oath, do the speech, do some other stuff. And then we end up getting back to the governor's mansion prior to the inaugural ball. And it occurred to me, I haven't told anybody who I'm picking, including the person I was going to pick. And that may have been a problem. I thought of that because when we put Justice Lagoa on the court and did the event in Miami at the Freedom Tower there, I mean, she gave this really remarkable speech. Is Barbara here? Yeah, so. So she gives this really remarkable speech, but people don't realize I didn't even call her until like 5 o'clock the day before. Can you be ready at 10 a.m. the next day? And she did. She had to stay up late at night and really did a good job. And so we did that. But you know, at the end of the day, when I was looking at this, I just saw a great opportunity to put folks who were very smart, very accomplished, and who understood, you know, what this is all about. And Barbara, I think with her background as having a family fleeing a country where there was no rule of law, has a particular dedication to the rule of law and understands constitutional government. And it was a really, really great thing. And she hit it out of the park on very short notice. Now, the other two, Luck, is Luck here? Yeah. We did an event, and he did it was a really, really awesome speech. But, you know, he had almost a week's notice, 4 days' notice? But I give him credit. He did not leak it. Nobody knew. I asked him to keep it quiet, and he did, and he really showed. But I think, you know, this is a guy that I had a number of my friends and associates and interview all these people, and I had some of the guys I respect just be like, you know, this guy Luck, like, it's unbelievable. Like, they were just raving about him, and then, you know, you get to meet him, and, you know, you understand how accomplished and how smart he is. But you also just see what a decent, genuine guy he is. And I think, you know, we need people like that in public service. And he's, what is he, are you 38? 38 or 39? Okay. You know, some of us get to 40 before we end up being in the highest, but that's just... So it was really good. And then, you know, with Carlos, he's worked for some of the, you know, the highest people in Florida government, Jeb Bush. I remember I asked Jeb Bush when the list came out. I was like, what do you think of Muniz? Oh, he's the smartest guy I've ever been around, all this stuff. Pam Bondi, oh my gosh, this guy's just unbelievable. And so you met with him, and you know, it was very clear that this guy was very, very smart and that he understood Florida government, which is important because, you know, you're going to be passing judgment on that. The problem, though, that was hard for me to get over at first was, you know, we already have a Chief Justice who went to Yale Law School. So I have him... to put, you know, Robert Bork said the way to save America is to close Yale Law School. So I'm thinking, am I really going to throw two Yaleys on this court? But, you know, I don't discriminate. I'm going to do based on me. So we did it. And I think, you know, I think that people were really, really excited, you know, with Carlos's selection. Rightfully so. And that's how you, I mean, one of the regions, anecdotally, I go, I mean, I was somewhere in, I was in Miami, and I have one of our ambassador to the OAS was like telling me, you know, about Luck, and then I'm somewhere else, they're telling me Carlos is great, and then Barbara and all this. So, look, I just think Florida's really blessed to, one, have had a really great pool of candidates, but then to have really three exceptional new justices on our Supreme Court. And it's a new day here in the state of Florida. And it's kind of been common now in the press and in other things to point to the Federalist Society and be like, oh my gosh, these conservatives have this organization, it's so powerful, where does the left have anything? And I just think to myself, you know, it wasn't Calabresi and McIntosh really who created the Federalist Society. Who created the Federalist Society was the fact that you had no real debate at the nation's law schools. You had no real diversity of opinion in the press when it came to reporting on judicial constitutional issues. You had very little interest in really broad swaths of elite society in this country who cared about the Constitution. And so they were really the ones that led to the creation of the Federalist Society because they were not taking these ideas seriously. And so as you started to do that, and as more people started to understand that, you know, judging in particular is not about what you want the law to be, it's about what the law actually is. You do not have the authority to rewrite the Constitution, you simply apply the Constitution. And it's not just because there's policies, judges will impose policies we don't agree with or I don't agree with. Yes, that is true, and I want to have policies I agree with, and if there's some way that does something I don't agree with, I'd like to be able to vote the person out of office, and you can't really do that with the courts at all in the federal system and only indirectly here for our appellate and above courts. So the policy matters, but to me, much more important is preserving freedom and individual liberty. And I think the Founding Fathers, if you read, you read those debates, and they didn't agree on everything. In fact, there were some big disagreements. I think the one thing that would have had unanimous support at the time was the need to divide the powers of government, executive, legislative, and judicial, and that if one branch usurped other functions, then our freedoms were in jeopardy. And they thought that that was a major, major no-no. Now, obviously, at the Revolution, they saw the king taxing without representation, and so they rebelled against executive authority when they created the Constitution. A lot of the problems during the Confederation period were the state legislatures that were just too powerful, and you didn't really have a check on legislative power. So they were concerned about that going into the convention. And now I think in more modern times, I mean, we've really seen problems with excessive judicial power, and our Supreme Court that has been in existence for the past 25 years, I think has been a good example, because you have a court that's constantly gone beyond the bounds of what is judicial into the realm of what is really legislative. And oh, by the way, is this just a big coincidence? Anything that had a political color to it just always happened to be decided in the way of the Democratic Party. Redistricting, this, that, all went in that way. And so that is not, you know, what we want. But I think that now we're in a much better spot. But at the end, we talk about the Bill of Rights and all that, that's important. But, you know, Hamilton wrote, they didn't have a Bill of Rights in the initial Constitution. And he pointed out that the whole Constitution was a Bill of Rights. The structure of the Constitution was a Bill of Rights. The fact that you had separate departments, that you had checks and balances, that is the most important protection for our freedoms. Yeah, I mean, the Bill of Rights is great, and that's something that's important. But when the rest of the government gets discombobulated, you know, we're not in a situation where individual liberty is secured. And so I think the Federalist Society has understood the threat of usurpation of power coming from the judicial realm. Heck, you look at some of the divisions we have in policy now and the polarization, some of that's been driven by court decisions over the last 30 or 40 years. And when judges think they can solve national controversies with some fluffy opinion, no, that hasn't worked. So that's kind of where I think we need to always talk to people about is the reason why we have a government that we do, the reason why the Constitution's structured that it is. It isn't just because, you know, we just want to have people learn this in school or whatever. There's a logic to it. It's an importance. And the judges that we have come that are on the court now understand that the role of the court, it's important, but it is limited. And I think you're going to see this Florida Supreme Court judge, not legislate. They will exercise judgment, but they will not exercise force nor will. And I think all of our freedoms are going to be more secure as a result of that. So I would say we're in a great spot in Florida. We got more to do. I mean, I look forward to being able to appoint a lot more good people to different various levels of the judiciary. It's something that I, as governor, will take very seriously, and we will make sure that we're getting really strong folks. And then obviously we still have a lot of fights at the federal level with the judiciary. I mean, it seems like we've gotten to the point where disliking Trump, if you're a district judge on a coast, let's say, that's enough to just try to stop policy, even nationwide. So there's a huge problems, I think, that need to be remedied. I think we're probably one justice away from fixing a lot of the overreach that we've seen really for decades if this president gets another selection. So we'll see what happens. One just final observation. I think when you're in government and you understand some of the things that the Federalist Society stands for and you have a frame of mind where you're thinking that way, I mean, it can be really beneficial. One of the first things I did after getting elected was to request the powers of the governor laid out, so I knew exactly what I can do, what my leverage was. Some of the stuff you just kind of know, but there's other things you could do. So you've seen us exercise authority to remove incompetent officials in places like Broward and Palm Beach counties. We have other tools in the toolbox, and we'll be using some more to bring more accountability in places that need it over the next several weeks. And then you'll see also, as we get into the budget season, the president, I have the ability for line item vetoing stuff. And so if the legislature wants to load up the budget with pork barrel spending, that's just going to provide me with more things to do. But I will be there to stop it and defend the taxpayer. So there's a lot of things. But one thing is, we have a plural executive. Ashley's great, but she really doesn't work for me. She got elected in her own right. You have a CFO, you have an ag commissioner. I'm going down to the panhandle talking about them. We're helping them with aid and all this stuff. And one of the things they're concerned about is fires because you have all this debris there. And it turns out I don't control firefighting. That's in the ag department. So it's just like, so I think that some of the stuff, the way Florida government is structured, would probably strike the founding fathers a little odd. Of course, I think our amendment process is out of whack with how that is working right now. I'd have people who would come to all my rallies during the campaign ask me, I don't understand the amendment. These are people who are really engaged. It's at the end of the ballot. I mean, I think if you're going to be doing these constitutional referendums, to me, that should be the only thing on the ballot so people know that's the reason why they're going to the poll. It's not some afterthought that's just kind of out there. So we've got work to do in those areas, but I'm really excited to be here. I'm excited for the work and happy and thankful for the work that you all have done. I ask you to keep it going. I ask you to be on the lookout for young talent who can be in this judicial pipeline. I really appreciate some of those appointments more so than even appointing people on my cabinet or in my agencies, because sometimes that first appointment can really lead to people having really, really great careers, and that's an honor for me to be able to perhaps be a small part of somebody's success. So there's a lot of work for you guys to do. There's a lot of work for me to do, but I'm sure glad to be able to have had the privilege to be able to do it on your behalf. So thank you all for having me. God bless everyone and keep up the good work.
Ladies and gentlemen, how lucky are we to have a governor who understands the proper role of the judiciary and appointing great judges can quote chapter and verse from the Federalist Papers.